Welcome to La Liga Weekly. Barcelona recorded another 1-0 win. That's a dozen for the season as they marched to the title. Their dedication to that scoreline was evidenced by the lengths that Robert Lewandowski went to protect it. Either that, or he's A, panicking that his superpowers might have deserted him, or B, thinks that Rafinha couldn't hit a cow's backside with a banjo. Yes, Diego Simeone's Atleti were 1-0 by Barca. It's not how we imagined Xavi's triumphant return would be. Real Madrid beat Celta Vigo despite a stuttering performance. They blamed it on the Bernabeu grass, which will be taken up and relayed after the Manchester City game, which seems wise. Maybe dig a hole for Haaland to fall into. And for the money they paid for the rebuild, they should be able to change the length of the grass at half-time, maybe make it 6 inches longer near the opposition corner flag and hoof the ball in there like the good old days. In the interest of balance, if we're highlighting Lewandowski's dry patch, we might note that Benzema played another 90 minutes without scoring. Are La Liga's ancient strikers unable to dominate for an entire season? The good news for Enes Unal is that the league's most efficient finisher should be coming into his peak around 10 years from now. It turns out that 41 is finally old enough. Take a bow, Joaquin, who will finally get a rest after more than 900 club games, 267 of which he's played since returning to Betis at the age of 35 to see out his final days. If they can just choke one last campaign, his work will be done. Sevilla are going in the other direction, fresh from steamrollering Manchester United. They dented Villarreal's Champions League ambitions. Youssef En-Nesyri has passed 20 goals for the season for club and country. Not bad for a man who didn't have a shot for 4 months. slight exaggeration. Get the point.
Yeah.
Right. There's interesting stuff in the Champions League race, the relegation battle. We'll get to that. Can somebody tell Soccer Base that there's a head-to-head rule in Spain? So Valencia is still in the relegation zone because their head-to-head against Almeria is inferior. It's the first mentioned head-to-head this season. Terry, good news for you in coming weeks.
Yeah. getting the
back of the envelope out again and scribbling down. We've got a relentless run. So we're recording on Monday. There was no Monday game. But after that, it never ends. 10 days consecutively, yeah. Three rounds all rolling into one. 13 match days out of 14. Copa del Rey final to come. And for Real Madrid, of course, Champions League games. And for Sevilla, of course, Europa League games. But shall we go to the top of the league? Shall we do the Barcelona Atletico game? Another 1-0, that's because Barca are hugely efficient in terms of defending. Tosegan getting a lot of praise, which he deserves, but it's not a one-man defensive mission. He's had a great season, his stats are really good, but they're not giving up many chances, and they're not giving up many good chances.
Well, yeah, sorry to slightly rally on their parade, but there has been a problem this season with teams finishing off decent chances against Barcelona.
Yeah.
I mean, Rodrigo de Paul was probably the glaring one in this game. He's got a free shot from 8-9 yards out and fails to hit the target. Griezmann was unlucky with one that hit the bar, the back heel, and one or two others. It was an interesting game in the fact that it just goes to show how a goal transforms a game, because it was quite understandably quite cautious until the goal, and then the second half it really opened up. And we had this weird situation of Carrasco being really good down the left and Rafinha being good down the right for Barcelona, and probably the two standout players for either team were actually playing against each other. So how does that work out that they both had really good games when one's not stopping the other? But the second half in particular was really entertaining, and Barcelona with these 1-0s just about did enough, but it probably and should have been more than one. Rafinha, is it unlucky to say when Lewandowski strikes it across 1 yard out?
I think he should have anticipated it.
Yeah, and gets a better connection than what he did. So he's missed from a yard or two out. Lewandowski, it can be critical of him saying, why didn't he pass? But he still should have scored. He's chipping it and curling it around Oblak, who can't use his hands because he's outside the box. And it should be a straightforward finish. But he just miscued it, and it went wide of the goal. Then you look and say, all he had to do was roll it to Rafinha.
Yeah.
And he still should have scored.
People say that far too glibly. Oh, he should have passed it. Because so many times a striker continues a run into space after the shot's been taken. Then he throws his arms up. But that wasn't this. He could have rolled that ball sideways for an easy
finish. It's an easy finish. He could have rolled it towards the goal slowly.
Yeah.
And Rafinha to run on. And just tap it in.
Yeah.
So once you miss the chance, then you're going to take criticism. And if you take a shot on the score, fine. But once you miss it, then that's been a little problem, because they still won the game 1-0. But Atletico were good, and so were Barcelona to a degree. You talk about the defensive strengths. Yes, I mean, this isn't how Xavi planned it. I can't imagine for 1 minute, but it really does help when you've only conceded 9 goals. It's an extraordinary achievement what they're doing. It really is. And they've chopped and changed at the back throughout the season. It's not ideal that Koundé is playing right back. Clearly, they need to find the right back to allow him to go and play alongside Araujo, which I think most people would agree will be their best centre-back partnership. So it's kind of been like a makeshift back for all season. I'm sure when they signed Koundé, I didn't think we're going to play him a whole season at right back and get away with that. We've only conceded 9 goals. Ter Stegen, when he's called upon, has been fantastic. There's a real argument now, a debate to say that he could be the player of the year. You don't often get that in La Liga. But when you look at his all-round attributes, there is a real big case for him to be the outstanding player this season. And that's not through a failure of other players, outfield players. That is down to the fact they've only conceded 9. And he's been not the only part of it, but a massive part of, you know, he's pulled off some great saves this season when teams should have scored. And the fact they haven't is largely down to him. So it's interesting how Barcelona have achieved it. We're not gushing with our praise of Barcelona, but we should be, probably, when you think about how they found themselves, the situation they caused for themselves. In the summer.
Yeah.
All the new players, we're not sure which ones are going to work. You're thinking, is this a good idea? Is that a good idea? I can't see that working. And somehow, because of their consistency in their performance, they have, you know, that was the last real big obstacle. There was a hint of at the weekend with the two teams at the top that it possibly could be a last chance for Real Madrid to have any impact, in the hope that Atletico took something from Barcelona. By the time Barcelona kicked off, it was down to 8 points. Then there is the possibility, if they lost to Atletico, there could be a slight wobble. When it only takes a couple more draws, we've seen the recent draws that Barcelona have had against teams that they would normally be beating. So I think that was probably the last chance alone for Real Madrid at the weekend, in the fact they got their win. Hoped Atletico would win, and then hope that might be a little bit of anxiety creeps into Barcelona's performance. But I think with De Jong back, Pedri coming off the bench, Dembele's not far away, I think they cruise now to the title.
It's a good question, a good argument about Ter Stegen being the player of the year. It would highlight, I think, that there isn't an outstanding attacking player in La Liga at the moment. I think that's not an exaggeration to say, is it? Yeah.
No, that's fair to say. I think if Lewandowski had continued his pre-World Cup form, then he would be on, I mean, he's on 17 goals now. He'd probably be, with the rate he was scoring, he should be approaching 30. Mm-hmm. But I think it's only 4 goals since the World Cup. I think he was going to be the obvious one, because when the first half of the season, you look at him, and I hadn't seen him on a regular basis weekly. Yeah. And you see, and I was, you know, gobsmacked with the efficiency of every aspect of his play. You know, his hold-up play, all the basic fundamentals of a centre-forward, and the leadership qualities, and then the finishing was just incredible. Remember, you know, 2 or 3 of the goals, you're thinking, how did he score that? There wasn't even a chance. Wasn't even a half chance. And he's finished that, and it's flashed in, and you think, oh, let's turn the game completely. So it kind of went from when he got sent off at Osasuna. That was the beginning of the downfall, lack of playing time, and then because of the suspension. And he hasn't really got going since then. Now, I think we have to balance that out by saying he has missed Pedri, he has missed De Jong, and he's probably missed Dembele. So he's not been blessed with loads and loads of chances in most of the games that he's been playing. So I think, I think that's fair. And Benzema has had moments. They're the two we're looking at in terms of would be normally the top scorers battling it out with probably another 10 goals each on their totals from what we're currently seeing. Benzema is 14 and Lewandowski 17. So it's really unusual. We've been spoiled. We're used to Messi and Ronaldo in 40s and 50s at this stage of the season. So There was a time where you thought Lewandowski was going to hit the 30 mark, and if they win the title, he gets 30 goals. I mean, he's still going to go down as having a good season if Barcelona win the league and he's top scorer. So,
yeah, like Barcelona in general, isn't it? It's an odd thing to moan about, isn't it? It's sort of first world problems, you know, moaning about how they won the league and how he's going to win the Pichichi, because it's all a little bit underwhelming, but. Yeah, so you know it's fine, isn't it? It's good. It's fine. They've done well. Well done, you know. But
yeah,
but
and it's a big achievement still. On a sort of the
macro long term scale, you're not going to get kids walking around theme parks in America wearing Barcelona shirts off the back of a series of 1-0 wins. They do need to be an entertaining team. That you know, if you want to be a super club with a world following, you need top level attacking players at their peak playing attacking football.
And unfortunately for Barcelona, that might not happen in the near future. I think although in fairness, they are seeing what they can do. And it was remarkable what they did last season. I've no idea how they do it and how they're going to do it. I'm sure there's going to be some more action again this summer. Roberto Firmino is one name. Kind of, I can see that. You know, that you look at that, and is it Bernardo Silva, Gundogan, they're looking at as well. So there's a market, and of course, Messi. So the market for them is free transfers of players over a certain age that they think they can get a tune out of. For Firmino, is only 31, they tried it with Aubameyang. It worked to a degree. He had an immediate impact. They got some money for him when they sold him.
Yeah.
So it kind of, from a business point of view, they can't go out and compete to... they couldn't go out and compete with Man City to bring Haaland in. So there is a Barcelona type of player at the moment, which is aging, but full of quality, short-termism, but that's, they've been forced into that situation. So, I don't be grudging with the praise. Not the best ever version of Barcelona, but I think they deserve enormous credit for the consistency they've shown this season. Real times of trouble. I mean, there's some good teams in La Liga now. It's a strong league. It really is a strong league. Stronger than I've ever known. And for them to have as many clean sheets, to only concede 9 goals, and to be as consistent as they have been in times of trouble, I think it's massive credit to Xavi and his squad of players.
Yeah, old and strong. That's La Liga at the moment. Isn't it? Right, Real Madrid and the pitch. So they're how much of a stretch? It's hard to know unless you're down there, isn't it? But they were all right. They were fine against Celta Vigo, weren't they? You know, they beat them fairly comfortably. Militao's getting a lot of praise, quite rightly. 5 goals for him this season, as well as his defensive work, which is significant. Asensio, who is obviously playing for a new contract, and 8 league goals, I think, isn't it now?
Yeah.
You know, a useful contribution. Depends how much he wants to get paid, I guess, isn't it, as to whether he would get a new contract or not. Is the pitch a problem? Are they understandably playing at sort of, I don't know, 80%?
Oh, not even 80% of the weekend. They didn't have to. It was nowhere near that. It really was. And they were, it was a stuttering performance, but they were always too strong. And the pitch, I have to say, the pitch, when you saw close-ups of it, it's far better than I played on a regular basis. But we're not used to seeing that at any level now. You can go into the lowest league in English football and the pitch will be better than we saw at the Bernabeu. It's worn. There was divots all over the place. So it was an issue. Although there was once or twice, I think Asensio got a genuine bobble where he went to finish and it bobbled up and hit him on the shin. Aspas used it 3 times and kept looking down the pitch, and it had nothing to do with his piece of play there, but he kept looking down at the pitch and waving his arms. He was poor, so he didn't help in terms of what Celta were trying to do going forward. They had 1 or 2 players missing at the back. But at Real Madrid, I look at Real Madrid now, Camavinga, I thought, was the star of the game. And Militao was close alongside him. But when I look at it's a kind of a weird situation. There's a lot of players out of contract at Real Madrid. And I look at the situation, Dani Ceballos and Asensio, Benzema's out of contract, Modric is out of contract. And I look at those two, Asensio and Dani Ceballos, and I'm thinking, they both played enough games to be satisfied. So how desperate do you want to be to just go to a new club to get more money? And there's no guarantee that Dani Ceballos and Asensio will get the money they're on at Real Madrid. So to get the money they're on at Real Madrid or the money they want, they're going to have to go to the Premier League. Dani Ceballos isn't going to earn what he earns at Real Madrid anywhere else in Spain, and probably not Marco Asensio. So they'll go, if Asensio is going to get the money, he's got to go to the Premier League. And I think he gets enough playing time to, it's different for, there are other players there. Mariano Diaz, for instance, his contract's up. He's no choice. They've been waiting for that to end for ages.
Yes.
But there are players around that you think, well, yeah, you've got to leave because you don't play. Your contract's up. The club don't obviously want you, and you've got to go elsewhere to get football. But I think with those two, it's a really interesting decision. It's not as if they're binned and they're playing and they're not playing. They're both giving a decent amount of playing time, and they're both contributing really well. So I'd be tempted, if I was those two, to try and do a deal with Real Madrid. Although you never know what's around the corner. I mean, Asensio is slightly better off because he plays up front and he can play in midfield. Dani Ceballos, if Real Madrid were to sign Bellingham, then that adds another player to the equation. Then he might have to think, well, what do I do here? I'm not going to be playing as much as I played this season because there's another addition. Toni Kroos has stayed, Modric has stayed. Camavinga is playing really well. Tchouameni is really good. So it's a difficult one. So it's an interesting position Real Madrid find themselves in. There've been about half a dozen of the good first-choice players out of contract in the summer. But the point I was going to make is I look at Real Madrid now. They are so strong. And I did predict, and I was glad, because I think one of the co-commentators' job is to try and not predict, but the portray an element of a side that's stronger than the opposition, and this is where you think they might score a goal. And Celta had no answer to the set pieces from Real Madrid. And you suddenly look at all these players that Real Madrid have, and they're all recognised as great players. And then all of a sudden you look and you go, he's big, he's big, he's big, he's big. There's like six really good players at set pieces. And I looked at Celta Vigo and I'm thinking, Unai Nunez has got his work cut out because he was the only one. And Seferovic were the only two that kind of got near matching the height of the Real Madrid players. So predicting that they would score from a corner or a free kick if the delivery was good was, I was quite pleased when Militao scored, to be honest. Because they should have scored more from those. I mean, Celta were quite happy without realising it, content to give away cheap free kicks and cheap corners. Until too late in the game, and they should have realised earlier on that, hang on, we've got a very, very small team. Gabri Veiga, I think, was the third marker, which tells you how small they were. And, you know, it was always going to be a problem. So Real Madrid, you said 80%, I'd say 50, which is, they kind of strolled through that game, apart from Camavinga, who was everywhere and did everything. It was absolutely awesome. He was brilliant, but he was always good. They were always too strong for Celta.
It could be a big summer, couldn't it, at Real Madrid? And we don't really know, do we? Because there's no guarantee that Ancelotti is going to stay as well. They've got out-of-contract players and, we believe, a massive amount of money to spend that was all ready to sign Mbappe with that hasn't been spent. Be interesting to go, wouldn't it? Because I mentioned Benzema at the top. The slight danger is, I mean, it's a funny one to complain about again, isn't it? Everything's nuanced in today's show, isn't it? Because he scored a couple of hat-tricks recently and we were hailing him then. But then he's gone into another bit of a dry patch. And the danger is at his age is that there obviously is a point at which you can't go on or you're not going to be turning out the numbers anymore. How important is it that they go and fill that difficult hole that we discussed before of the replacement stroke complementary player?
Well, they've tried so many times, haven't they? They haven't got it right. And it's difficult to buy the quality they want, knowing that generally Benzema plays in all the big games and the majority of the games in La Liga. So therefore, players will be reluctant to sit on the bench, get criticism because they don't play and they don't score and their stats are not very good.
Yeah,
and then come on for 10 minutes for Benzema, it's another appearance, and you don't score. And then all of a sudden, you're looking at 15 appearances, and you've got one goal, and you think, well, he's only played 15 minutes per game, if that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it is a difficult one. But
so do they suck that up for another year, Real Madrid, or do they?
No, I don't think they can afford to, right, because Mariano Diaz has been that one this season that's barely played. They've used Rodrigo as a makeshift centre forward ahead of Mariano Diaz. So I do think if Mariano Diaz leaves, you can't just rely on Rodrigo, because you're relying then on two centre forwards, and one's not really a centre forward. So I think that does need to be resolved. And it's the plan up front, like Benzema does at the age of 35, is different to Modric in midfield at 37. You rely on that sharpness, same as Lewandowski, that can deteriorate. It will deteriorate at some stage, and it might be slowly but surely. But I look at Benzema, and he is 30% he's playing, and I don't see the point. These players are thoroughbreds, and they have to be gallops now and then. They have to put through their paces, but you can't afford them, Benzema, to drift along playing at well below his normal level and then expect him to pick it up. You might as well play him at his full pace and then rest him. So I presume he's going to be rested in the Tuesday match against Girona, because he's playing all that he played against Cadiz, and you're thinking that's a risk. And it's a risk of injury. If Benzema gets injured, it is catastrophic for Real Madrid against Manchester City. Rodrigo is a fantastic player, but it's not the same as Benzema. So it's interesting how you keep them ticking over. You can't just totally rest them and then expect them to play when they haven't played for 2 or 3 weeks. So you've got to really manage it really well. And they've got such a schedule, Real Madrid, coming up. I mean, the Copa del Rey final is on the Saturday. The first leg of the Man City game is on the Tuesday. And you need to play your strongest team in both of those. There's no way you can coast against Osasuna. And you want to get to win the Copa del Rey final. So that's going to be two of those games where you're not going to get the option to rotate. You're going to have to play the big hitters in both of those games. So bearing in mind before then, and post the Manchester City game, then before the second leg, it's really important. As I say, I think it was a pivotal moment this weekend, because Real Madrid expected to beat Celta and they hoped that Atletico would get something. It'd be down to 8 points. Might be a little bit of a wobble from Barcelona. But I think that weekend's result from Barcelona puts they're going to win the league. Real Madrid are not going to win the league. So now we might see
free Real Madrid to properly rotate.
Yes, as opposed to, I was really surprised Benzema played the whole match. Yeah. I'm presuming he's not going to take any part in the game on Tuesday against Girona. But who knows?
Another 90 minutes.
But that's Real Madrid now. When I look at their chances against Man City, I do look at an athletic, a team full of quality, great players, but they're also a lot more athletic than Real Madrid teams have been in the past. When I say athletic, powerful, power comes into it. You look all around their team. And I include Modric in that. Modric doesn't get knocked off the ball. He doesn't get pushed over. He doesn't go around knocking people over. But the endurance that he still has and still shows at the age of 37 matches the rest of them. So, you know, maybe Kroos not as much, but that's not been his game. You look at Toni Kroos standing in the tunnel. He's a powerful midfield player. Yeah. You know, he's another one that we see his quality. But he can look after himself. He's a decent athlete in terms of size and power.
It's something that we've levelled against, not we, but people have levelled Spanish clubs, isn't it?
Yes.
Compared specifically to the Premier League,
where and Bayern Munich.
Yeah. So where obviously in the Premier League there's a style, slightly exaggerated difference, I think, but they've definitely recruited strong, fast players, not big. You know, not big in the old style of big.
Vinicius comes into that category. Yeah. He's not 6 foot, but he's in terms of power,
very
and
athletic.
And
yeah,
speed.
And it's interesting that when you put it that way, that because again, if you add Bellingham into that mix as well, if they were to get him, he's another that you know that you are looking at. You know that dealing just accepting the reality of the physical side of football. I guess
even players like Danny Carvajal. You know, he's one of his strengths. His athleticism and his power and his aggression. Fede Valverde is another player that we've always looked at. He's a good player, but when you look at his attributes, you can include power, endurance, aggression. And then you've got the rest of the players that in Camavinga and Tchouaméni and Militao, Rüdiger and Alaba, and Benzema is a powerful, strong, you know, athletic player. So that's what it's full of. And I think I'm hearing Real Madrid, Man City are favourites to win the league, the Champions League, and to win this tie. It's Real Madrid, and they've come up with a solution to. Do you remember Barcelona? Well, they still are getting knocked over regularly by Bayern Munich, and there was a big difference in. And we were told, I think it was the all-German Champions League final, we were told this is the future of football. Then Barcelona come roaring back using mainly skill and quality and technique. So, but I think there's definitely been, from Ancelotti's guidance as well, leaning towards players that bring that. I mean, you're getting the real deal. If you buy top-quality players, that can also be as athletic as Real Madrid are buying. You've got the whole package. The only one that's been let down on it is Hazard. Hazard is the top quality player, but without that other stuff that I'm talking about from some of the other players that's lent himself to being the
Although,
athlete
yeah,
that he should be.
he was more athletic, wasn't he? And when he was at Chelsea, that wasn't, you couldn't level that against him
No,
previously,
no.
particularly. I mean, he's always been a little on the skinny side, but you'd put him in that Modric bracket when he was a Chelsea player. That's what they thought they were buying, wasn't it? A more attacking version of Modric. That,
Exactly.
anyway, shall we have a look at the Champions League places? Very good week for La Real, of course. A 2-1 win over Rayo Vallecano. A goal for Sorloth, who's, he hasn't got many recently,
Yes.
has he? But he's got into double figures, I think, hasn't he now? 10 for the league, I think. Meanwhile, Betis lost and Villarreal lost. So all close games, but very good weekend for Real Sociedad.
Oh, excellent weekend. And they've, again, I've changed my mind and who's going to finish in the pool. This week, I'm going to say Real Sociedad. And it's just based on the
What
flimsy
did you say last week?
evidence.
I can't remember.
A Betis.
Right, okay, right. But they've lost three in
Betis the
four
week
now, haven't they?
before, and then Villarreal. And then it was, it's, I, but that was, I was reluctant to Real Sociedad because they were in poor form. But recently, they have found their form and they look like the Real Sociedad that we saw earlier in the season. They have a decent advantage now. And it was a big weekend for them. It should have been, I mean, it was a tough game against Rayo. Missy Palazon puts them 1-0 up. And with their problems that they're having at the moment, Real Sociedad, you're thinking, oh, this could be an issue. But they got Sorloth got an equaliser pretty quick. It was interesting watching the celebration of Sorloth. It was almost, I can't remember who crossed the ball. It was out from the left. And he kind of, after he scores, punches the air. You can see it's, I recognise the look of, I've scored back on the sheet. And then it was almost like he was admonishing the player that crossed it, as if to say, I've been telling you for ages to put that in, that type of cross. And it was important that he scores, massively important that he got the win. It was another cross that led to the own goal from Lejeune. So that was a prior a decent team. So that's an excellent performance for Real Sociedad. And then, of course, repaid by the fact that Osasuna and Sevilla did them a favour and beat the two rivals as well.
So Villarreal lost to Sevilla, a resurgent Sevilla. Let's talk about Villarreal before we get on to Sevilla. Talk that Iraola is going there in the summer to be a new manager. I don't know if you have a view on that. And also, just to try, it's hard, isn't it, Villarreal? Because they're so, two different managers so far this season, but the same inconsistency. It's hard to fathom out what's wrong with them.
And in this game, I have to be fair, they were unlucky. I mean, it's a crucial 94th minute winner for Nezeri. Almost impossible to defend against him when the ball's
He can
delivered
jump,
him
can't he?
properly. We can see it happening, can't you, before your eyes. You can see the cross coming in and you can see him on the move and you're thinking, and he jumps. He's a tall player and jumps. He's got a fantastic leap. And it's almost, you then lean towards the opinion that it's actually impossible to stop him. If the delivery's right and his movement's good and his technique has improved with his heading, and you could see it as that cross is coming in the 94th minute, and you're seeing Nesiri on the move, he's against Pedraza, who criticised himself heavily after the game. There's nothing you can do. You can try and get as close and tight and impede the player as much as you possibly can. It was like Militao when he charges forward and he runs past zonal marking and the ball's delivered right and you get a big, strong, dynamic player that's full of determination. There's very little you can do. So we do like to pinpoint set pieces and look at it and go, I think you can do it if it's teams are scoring against you on a regular basis. But I think every now and then, when you've got a player as good in the air as Nzeri is, if he gets the service, it's almost impossible to stop him. Rafa Mir's goal was a good goal as well. Villarreal got back on level terms, and that game could have gone either way. There's no Gerard Moreno. Morales gets injured pretty early on. They're suffering a little bit. I do feel a little bit for Kike Setién. I saw the embrace after the game from Mendilibar and the comments from Mendilibar, who said actually a draw would have been a fair result. And you know, you could see him embracing Kike Setién. It's probably exactly what he said. So it was, that was a tough result on Villarreal. But the Sevilla, what has happened there? It's like watching every other version of Sevilla we've seen for the last 15 years. And you look at him, you think, well, what was happening this season where even Rakitic looks like an athlete again? So it's not just about, it's amazing what confidence does. You suddenly get a spring in your step. It's not just about the first touch and you're finishing and you're defending and your individual attributes. You suddenly run faster and longer and further and harder when you've got a bit of confidence. It's amazing what confidence can do. And the Sanchez-Pizjuan is rocking. It's a Ferrier weekend, a Ferrier week. And it was a sight to see. It was a sight to see when we saw them on Thursday, the passion in the stadium. And normal service finally has been resumed. And I back them to win the Europa League. What did I predict? 52 points, something, wasn't it? Do you remember? And then I tried to go back on it, row back on it. They had a little spell where they won three or four on the trot. They're 38 points. I think they've got every chance of getting a 50-point mark. And yet we've been fearing all season that they were going to get relegated. Rightly so.
Well,
they were terrible.
It wasn't getting any better.
Stunk the place
Pauli.
Out.
Yeah.
No, they were stinking the place out. When you saw the Sevilla at home or away, it was shambolic, it was chaotic, it was ill-disciplined. Individual players were playing really poorly. And then all of a sudden, someone comes in with basic fundamentals, wins the trust of the players, because by that stage, the players were looking at anybody coming in and saying, please help us. You know, we want some guidance. We haven't had any guidance. We didn't know who was playing each game. We didn't know what system we were playing each game. And Mendilibar was more than welcomed by a talented group of players who just wanted that common sense guidance and to install some belief, some fundamentals. And then all of a sudden you see them and you're thinking, this is the team that should be fourth in the league, to be honest. I mean, on their day, I still placed them better than BRL, Real Sociedad and Betis. It's astonishing that they've been so low this year.
Yeah, because when you look at this faltering race for fourth place, Sevilla are probably the missing part of it, aren't they? In recent seasons, they would be the obvious choice for fourth, wouldn't they?
Yeah, they've slipped up as allowed someone else to take that advantage. Yeah. So we're going to see someone different in the Champions League. But when you look at
which
the quality...
Which is nice, but none of them really seem to want it.
I promise you. They do, but it's handling the pressure. It's Betis were really poor in their game. Defensively, all over the place. It's an issue. I mean, Osasuna away is a tough game. You don't know what you're going to get from Osasuna at the moment, because for these players, the biggest game of their life is going to be against Real Madrid in a couple of weeks' time on the Saturday. So you've got a group of players that might be on the fringes, like Ante Budimir, who thinks, if I have a good run, I might, if he's continues scoring a couple of goals at the weekend, I think it's only his fourth and fifth goals of the weekend. So he hasn't played too much yet this year's season, hasn't scored too many goals. It's a last chance for him. Then you've got a group of players that know they're probably going to be playing in the final that might, at some stage, think, I don't want to get injured and miss that. So you don't know what you're going to get from Osasuna, but I need to go and watch a game at their stadium, because I'm really enjoying watching the whole spirit of the club. The supporters look awesome. It looks fantastic. So I kind of feel that I was watching it at the weekend thinking, I need to go to that stadium or watch a game to witness it, because I do see something special happening, and I'm not writing them off from getting something. Beating Real Madrid in the final of Copa del Rey, if Real Madrid, are distracted by other things, they can't afford to be, because Osasuna would give them a really good, really good tough game. So a little bit hard to criticise Betis too much, but Osasuna were at it and Betis took too long to get going in this match.
Joaquin came on. He was mainly applauded.
He was terrible, though. He was terrible. Yeah. Well, he's probably, so many mistakes.
Yeah, yeah. He's, I mean, 41 is probably enough, isn't it? Yeah. But the TV cameras were keen to show the people who were clapping, but there was a bit of whistling going on as well, wasn't there, when he came on? It wasn't universal applause, was it? I mean,
he is a popular personality in Spain.
Yeah.
And he wears his heart on his sleeve. He'll be missed. I'll miss him. I hope he sticks around. I don't know if he's got it in him to be a manager. I don't know if he's got a serious enough personality to be a manager.
He's got a TV
manager.
Show already, hasn't he? It's an easier life if you're a big star, isn't it? I think.
Yeah, and popular. Yeah. That is the key. If you're going to go down that road, if you're popular and you know people have affectionate towards you from all different supporters. It was interesting seeing the race at the end of the game to try and get his shirt. I saw at least three players. I think Jimmy Avila, who didn't even come on, won the or at least was pointing towards the changing room. Joaquin said, "I'll do it," and we'll swap in there. No, he's an absolute legend. He will be missed. He is popular around Spain, but in general, his performances have still been good this season, which have led me at times to believe he's got another season in him. I think he's very, very close. He's 6 or 7 appearances away from the all-time record in La Liga. So I think that is the target now, between now and the end of the season. And most of this season, when he's been playing and come on, I thought, yeah, he's another season in him. At the weekend, whether it was the effect of the emotion of announcing his retirement at the end of the season, he was, like so many of the Betis attacking players, a little bit off target at the weekend.
Do you want to change your mind? I can't remember what you said about who's going down, so you can change your mind with freedom.
We are ticking teams off now, though, aren't we?
Yeah, I suppose.
It's becoming a smaller list. I've got 7 in it now.
Right, yes. Because, Sevilla, we're ticking them off.
One definitely gone.
Yeah. Girona, they're fine, aren't they? Even though they lost at the weekend. I think they're on 38, aren't they, Girona? You're not having them in it, are you? Am I?
No. They're fine, Girona.
Say the results.
They're 8 clear.
Yeah. So Valladolid beat Girona by 1-0. Almeria lost at home 2-1. To Athletic. What else do we need to say? Mallorca beat Getafe 3-1, coming from behind. Espanyol 0, Cadiz 0 on Friday night. And Elche 0, Valencia 2. Always good to play Elche, because if you know, you're struggling for goals, they'll kick it in the back of the net for you. So, you know,
they're obliging, aren't they? They're an obliging team. Valencia was their first win in 8. And if you ever needed to be playing, do we need to lift us out of this slump, Elche? And Valencia weren't great. Samuelino, which more or less emphasised what we talked about in the podcast, why didn't he play the week before against Sevilla? He was on the bench. He plays in this game, was an absolute star, and was the difference between two teams. And so it makes it, he'll get the credit. Baraja gets the credit for an away win, which that's only a second away win in the season. Still keeps him in the bottom three, but also emphasises, why didn't you play Lino last week? What was you doing? Your full playing a left back at left wing, Tony Lato, and not playing a player that's been arguably your best player this season. So Lino responded well to being left out of that massive game the week before. And Elche, their goal difference isn't that bad for a team that are hopeless, that have only won 2 games. Mm. So every game they lose, they're actually there or thereabouts. You know, it's... But I can't imagine what it's like to play for Elche at the moment. They all know that they're down. They all know their future is up in the air. There'll be some that think they're too good to go down and will try and get another club in La Liga. It's week after week. It must be absolute torture that you just keep coming up short. But that was a huge win for Valencia. As I say, they're obliging opponents, Elche, because everybody beats them. But there's still significant pressure on a team that hasn't won in 8 to go there and not be the team that's Villarreal and Osasuna, the only 2 that have lost to Elche. So that was a massive win for Valencia. Still keeps them in the bottom 3, but it gets them closer. I mean, they knew that going into that game, and even if they won, they weren't going to get out of the relegation zone, but it does give them a breather going forward and a little bit more confidence now, because they had 0 confidence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Who's changed your mind? Almeria losing at home is obviously a blow, because that's been their saving grace, hasn't it, for the season? Getafe were looking good at one stage. Espanyol home game that they couldn't win. So I guess these are all the reasons that they're in the relegation scrap, aren't they?
Yeah. Getafe have surprised me because they're really underachieved. And I still look at their team and I think that's a decent team. I think they've got a decent manager. They've kept faith with the manager. When they went 1-0 up against Mallorca, I'm thinking, oh, that this is the type of result where Getafe then not cling on to the clean sheet, but it make it really difficult for teams to break them down. And at the same time, Mayoral and Enizuno will pose a threat at the other end. David Soria is normally really reliable in goal. Made one or two errors in this match where he could have done better. And I think the first one where he parries the shot, classic long-range shot, he pushes it straight out to Kangin Lee for the tap-in. And he didn't have the best of afternoons. Rayo, kind of the deflection for the goal from Mayoral, then replies with a fine header. And then you're thinking, well, Getafe have blown this. So Getafe, I keep thinking, I'm looking at it, I think Valladolid are on the verge of, I've still got them included, but I think that the way that they've turned things around with a change in manager, I think they're going to be good now. They're going to be safe. But I still include them. They're the last team I include. Anyone above Valladolid, I think, are okay. So I've got Valladolid, 35 points. So they're five clear, Valladolid. So you're looking at probably another couple of wins is going to be enough for them. And the way they're playing, their confidence, I think they'll get that. There'll be some big games against other teams at the bottom between them as well. Getafe, I think, I keep saying I think they'll be all right, but I'm really not so sure now, to be honest. I look at it and I think, yeah, no, that's an issue for Getafe this late in the season. To be a point above it, I think they're in trouble. Cadiz will be all right, but they're still involved in it because they're only 2 points clear. So I think we look at the cut-off point. If Valladolid were to win, then I think they're safe. And if they win another game quickly, I think they're out of it. No problems whatsoever. I don't include Celta in the relegation battle. So I think it is from Valladolid down, with Valladolid soon to be ticked off, and then we're down to Cadiz, Getafe, Almeria, Valencia, Espanyol, and Elche have gone. Espanyol are uninspiring. They were unlucky on Friday. They should have won against Cadiz. They hit the woodwork twice. They were a better team. But every now and then, every sort of 15 minutes, Cadiz broke up the other end of the pitch, and even Helecho should have scored at the end of the game. So yeah, I think Cadiz will be all right because they do well at home. They're hard to score against, as they showed in this game. They're hard to break down. They're well organised. I think they'll eke their way to survival over the next three or four games. So it's Almeria, but I would be worried if I was Almeria, because you're looking at their away performances. Now they're losing games at home. It's only 4 points away from home all season. So it's, we'll see now what impact that win for Betis. I mean, you look at recent run of results there for Espanyol. It's awful. You know, that was they put a stop to the slump where they were losing every game. They got the draw, but it's at home against Cadiz in a game where they've got to win. So all those teams are in trouble for different reasons. And obviously they're there because they don't win games, don't get points, don't score goals, let goals in. Who's going to have the nerve to stay up? So it's but we are ticking teams off. A couple of weeks ago, I thought Mallorca might be on the fringes of it. I thought that Girona. Girona. Now Girona, 38 points. With a good spell of two or three games gets you out of it. But Almeria, I don't know how they got. Only got beat 2-1 by Athletic Club. Athletic were brilliant, and it was shot after shot after shot, and it was it's an impressive performance. Athletic have crept up on the quiet, to be honest. They have crept up quietly into a really challenging position for probably, when I'm looking at the points deficit between them and Real Sociedad, is too much to close up for a top four place. But they're in a good run of form there, Athletic.
Yeah. Right. Okay. We will stop there. We've got, we roll straight in though. So we start again Tuesday, Cadiz versus Osasuna, Girona against Real Madrid are the earlier games, 6:30 UK. And then Betis versus Real Sociedad Tuesday night is a huge game in the later game on Tuesday. Not quite a showdown for the top four, but it's influential. Atleti play Mallorca and Getafe play Almeria in the early games on Wednesday. Celta Vigo versus Elche. Big chance for Celta to sort of banish those remaining relegation fears. And then Rayo against Barcelona. Rayo have given Barca problems, haven't they, in recent times. Valencia versus Valladolid is another huge game at the bottom. Villarreal versus Espanyol and Athletic against Sevilla. In form teams there. And then we roll straight back round into another round starting again the Friday after that. Terry is off to Spain, so we will work out exactly when we are going to be back and wrapping up that midweek round. It will be soon, and we'll see you for that. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.